Now on the BBC World Service, Anita Rani travels to the heart of Bollywood, to Mumbai, to find out what the future holds for India's film industry. As it approaches 100 years of cinema, is Bollywood breaking barriers?
I'm in Mumbai, which is home to Bollywood, and I'm right outside Shah Rukh Khan's house, who's arguably one of the biggest stars in the industry. Now, every day, crowds gather outside his huge gated white mansion to try and catch a glimpse of their idol. It's as though they're worshipping at the gates of a demigod.
Chai, chai, chai.
Oh, and there's the chai wala.
Chai, chai.
So these guys, they got here at 3 and they've been standing outside his house for 4 hours. Char ghante. Yahan par. Kyun?
Shah Rukh Khan ko dekhne ke liye.
Just to see Shah Rukh Khan. India is a land of extreme contrasts. Wealth, religion, language. But the one thing that unites Indians, other than cricket, is their obsession with film. For generations, families have together watched the high melodrama and the tragicomedy, the tantalizing songs and dances, the love stories, heroism and happy endings that define Bollywood films.
Why are most of our films about love? Because the simple thing is that the Indian youth has got no place to go and kiss his or her girlfriend. That's the main reason.
But a shift is taking place in the world's biggest film industry. With the impact of globalization, audiences in India are diverging, tastes are changing, and a new world cinema is emerging.
In India, there is a thirst by the urban, predominantly English-speaking class to own a piece of cinema which they can call their own, which doesn't dumb them down, which doesn't insult their intelligence, and which tells them something which relates to their own life.
Stuck between the behemoth of Bollywood and the lure of Hollywood, can this new cinema find its voice in India and abroad? I'm Anita Rani, and you're listening to Bollywood Breaking Barriers on the BBC World Service. Through a restaurant, into a disused Mumbai hotel, up an elevator, onto the second floor of what is essentially a building site, there's what looks like a mini audition factory. To my left, children are waiting for a biscuit commercial, and down the corridor, there are 40 or 50 men of all shapes and sizes auditioning for the lead role in a Hindi feature film. Indians love film and they worship their film stars. Everyone in this city is a wannabe actor, director or producer. India makes over 1,250 feature films a year, and the epicenter of the industry is right here in Mumbai. Of course, the Indian film industry is so much more than just Bollywood, but it's the Bollywood brand which is recognised across the globe.
Well, Bollywood is a term that's really taken off, I would say, certainly over the last 10, 15 years. And some people think, you know, Bollywood is just a film, but actually we have to think about Bollywood now as a cinema with emerging genres.
Dr. Rajinder Dudra is the Senior Lecturer in Film and Media Studies at the University of Manchester and a specialist in Indian film.
Bollywood cinema, which has travelled far and wide across boundaries, across borders, so not just where Indians or South Asians have settled across the world, but also it's been popular for a number of decades with Russians, East Europeans, with Nigerians. So Bollywood has come of age in the sense of people now know of it. It's no longer considered as kitsch or something you laughed about. And it's an international cinema that has arrived on the international media landscape.
Coming out of Bollywood today, you can expect to see animated films like Ramayana, action films like Rawan, and rom-coms like Cocktail. Some cater for audiences within India, and some for the millions of Indians who live around the world. But mostly, they stick to a traditional Bollywood formula.
One of the ways in which people usually associate Bollywood films is, if you like, the singing and dancing masala type variety of films. So this is a film which has classic melodrama. Usually there's high drama between a family or mothers and sons. There's dishum dishum action, high octane, high spectacle. There's romance, boy meets girl, love stories, and they often invariably have to overcome some hurdles, whether it's societal, caste, or basically rich and poor. So that really refers to the masala type, and with masala, it's a mixture or a blend of spices, you know, from the hot and the medium to the sugar to the sweet to from 1 minute crying to the next minute laughing.
And when it's good, it's really good. At the heart of great Bollywood films is a style of storytelling able to transcend the different religions, values, geography and economic inequalities that exist across India. It's within this huge and complicated landscape that directors like Dibakar Banerjee must operate.
Being a filmmaker in India means that you make film for a continent, and therefore you have to pare your storytelling down to the very universals, to the extent that your expressions almost become like a no or a kabuki play where the audience knows. And it's not only the expressions, the casting. The moment a villain walks into screen with a particular kind of music, it does about 10 minutes of storytelling in 20 seconds. These are codes of storytelling that we share, that we work. And that the West doesn't have because it's a different society.
There's always been an art house film scene in India, and great filmmakers have emerged from it. But since the 1990s, when the economy opened up, the urban middle class began to grow and consume different ways of storytelling. Now there's a greater appetite for films that go beyond the confines of traditional Bollywood.
It's one of those films that really changed the face of Indian cinema, because it's a realistic setting, Bombay underworld.
Mumbai-based film critic and journalist Mayank Shekhar has been monitoring the changes coming out of Bollywood over the last 10 years.
Somewhere around the mid-90s, you realize that there would not be a single film that's universally accepted across the country. This is because malls came up, multiplexes came up. The audience that would otherwise not watch Hindi films at all, from the upper classes, from the middle classes, they began to, you know, hang out at malls and therefore multiplexes. So there were a lot of films that were getting made for them. That's how it started. Then it became intelligent films too, some of them, because this audience also exposed to world cinema. So yeah, so I think what's interesting now is the fact that we're exploring India through the eyes of really smart filmmakers, and we're loving it. There's a film called Gangs of Wasipur, which is the history of a town in small town India. And I think it's better than Gangs of New York.
These films may not seem that different to someone brought up in the West, but in India, they are. They're edgier, grittier, and are beginning to reflect elements of Indian society that traditional Bollywood shies away from. Last year's film, Delhi Belly, was a massive success in the urban centres and abroad. Billed as uncensored and uncut, it's an urban comedy about three young men living in a squalid flat in Delhi who accidentally get mixed up in a drugs drop. It's irreverent, there's a lot of swearing, and a dry humping scene like never witnessed before in Indian cinema.
Oh, just a little harder.
Excuse us.
Oh my God, yes, yes.
But it's only one film, and prominent voices in the industry say India is not ready, nor does it want these type of slick urban films.
I'm not sure, as an Indian, what we mean by evolvement. And I think many people also debate this whole thing. Is everything that is called an evolved society in the West, does it necessarily mean the same for us?
Leela Sampson is the chairwoman of India's Central Board of Film Certification, or CBFC. Comprised of 9 regional offices, panels containing 50% women and people from all professions and castes, the CBFC has a fair idea of who make up the majority of India's audience. Established in 1951, originally as the Central Board for Censors, the CBFC's mission statement is based on guidelines from the 1952 Cinema Act, according to which its number one mission is to ensure healthy entertainment, recreation and education to the public through the certification of films. These days, its unofficial remit is much wider, and the CBFC has come a long way from the days when it would cut a passionate on-screen kiss or insist on replacing the word sexy with baby in a song, Sexy, Sexy, Sexy. But it still remains a challenge to walk a tightrope between India's right-wing voices and its liberal intelligentsia. Is it your role to be censoring, or should you just be certifying?
At one time we were called the Censor Board of India. I object to people calling us by that name anymore. I'd like to be a certification body. However, we'd like to say to a director, you know, why don't you volunteer to say that this is an adult film and take an A? But they all want a U because of television. So it's a bit of a catch-22 situation. In television in India, we can only show a UA or a U film. And they want that larger audience, of course.
But as a certification body then, what power does that give you over these films? And should it be your role to be giving moral guidance, or are you just there to say, this is an A, this is a U, this is...
In an ideal world, you will wait for a nation, and I mean every citizen in this nation, right into the interiors, to the villages, all of them become aware of the spectrum of films that are hitting them on television and the choices they must make. Ideally, each one of us have a switch and should be putting it off if we're not comfortable with it. But those who wish to see it should be able to see it. That's an ideal world. However, as a nation, we have extremely, extremely conservative opinions here, and we have extremely liberal.
But everyone has the choice to switch their TV off.
No, unfortunately, in villages in India, a child doesn't have a choice. We are a changing and very evolving society, but where? In the main metropolitan cities. What about the rest of India? What about the large majority of people who live out there who have no idea of this so-called progression that we're talking about? And what is very important is that we are a nation of many, many religions, a large number of philosophies.
And do you have to be sensitive to all these religions?
We have to absolutely be very sensitive, and also the political changes that are taking place. Suddenly there's a heightened sensitivity towards naming certain classes of people. You cannot, for instance, call them by their caste names or their work names. You can't call a dhobi who's a washerman. You can't call him a washerman anymore.
That's a reference to the film Dhobi Gut, which the CBFC worked very hard to release in 2010. In a valiant attempt to stamp out the racism inherent in India's ancient caste system, the government has very strict laws on how people from different castes can be referred to. But it has meant that when caste is mentioned in films, even when within context, various political groups put pressure on the CBFC to cut so as not to offend. Film critic Mayank Shekhar was a panel member on the CBFC for 2 years.
Like, for instance, I was in a screening, you know, for a film. Somebody used the word ghati, okay, in a film, right? Now, ghati is a derogatory slang for someone who's uncultured. Now, it's a random dialogue in the movie, and immediately there's one of the members who hears it and says, hey, I heard the word ghati and it needs to be removed. And obviously it's being said in a certain context, and everyone immediately agrees, yeah, it's going to hurt sentiments. And somehow the state sort of appeases that kind of behavior.
This is Bollywood Breaking Barriers on the BBC World Service with me, Anita Rani. At times, the CBFC does do the state's bidding. In the recent blockbuster movie Rockstar, they decided to blur flags in a background of a shot that said Free Tibet, so as not to upset relations with India's wealthy neighbour, China. Dibakar Banerjee was asked to remove a caste word, Dalit, from his film in case it offended members of that caste. Whatever action they take, the CBFC are criticised either by the right-wing pressure groups or the media. Supporters of the Akhil Bhartiya Vidyarthi Parishad, or ABVP student group, burnt posters of Delhi Belly to show their protest against cinema hall authorities for allowing children to watch the movie. Madhura Pandit represents the ABVP as executive of the Maharashtra province chapter.
If the picture has got a rating A, it's fine. It should not be published in all the theatres. If you want to see, you go, you buy the CD, you watch at your home. It should not be published in public domain.
So what do the AVBP want from their entertainment? Well, it seems they're very much in line with the 1952 CBFC guidelines of good, clean fun.
We love entertainment, and we want entertainment which is pure, which is not taking us to vulgarity, which is not taking us to addiction, which will not provoke us to make violence. We want pure entertainment because India is a country where the individual doesn't go and see the film. There the family goes. Our basic unit is a family. There are some instincts which are just for our bedroom that should not come in public domain. It is a freedom. You have your freedom of your expression, you have freedom of any your movement, but it is freedom till it doesn't harm me.
If you don't have the power to offend, I think you will be losing out a lot in terms of pushing envelope in art.
Mayank Shekhar.
I think one of the roles of art is the power to push the envelope and offend sometimes. It's okay. The best form of censorship is don't watch it.
So are we really witnessing the beginnings of a breakthrough cinema, films that will subvert the conventions of Bollywood and still appeal to its mass audiences? Can the burgeoning new wave find a foothold in a country where the fast food of Bollywood has been feeding the masses for a century?
We've always wanted to have our posh set. We've always wanted to have our, how shall I put it, the cinephile set and the cinephile directors.
We're in the office of Debakar Banerjee, the man of the moment. Director of Shanghai. Breakfast has just arrived. What are we eating here? What's this?
This is kanda poha.
It is so delicious.
Yeah, and you need to squeeze that. In India, there is a thirst by the urban, predominantly English-speaking class to own a piece of cinema which they can call their own, which nourishes them, which doesn't dumb them down, which doesn't insult their intelligence, and which tells them something which relates to their own life.
Do they want it as their own, or are they wanting to emulate the West?
Bit of both. How can you define a post-colonial society without the roots that it has grown in? And how can you define a post-colonial society without the values it's trying to reach? When much of your culture is a mishmash of what has been imposed, what is your own, and what has been stolen and borrowed.
So who's your audience when you're making your films? Who's in your mind?
Well, the fact is that in my particular case, most of my audience lies in the 7 or 8 big cities of India. I mean, I'm just barely surviving beyond that.
Does it matter that the man in rural, in Orissa, isn't watching Shanghai?
I really, at this point, do not care whether the villager in Orissa watches my film or not. Because just as the villager in Orissa is a relevant member of this country, so are the urban people of this country. We are a relevant group.
So who's going to make films for them?
Every film that is being released, which goes to all the small cities, which makes those 100 crores, 80 crores.
So the Bollywood blockbusters.
They are making the films for those villages and the small towns.
But they don't reflect their lives. They're escapists, their fantasy.
Now, what if they want to escape? What if the average life of an Indian is so stressed, is so full of competition, so full of disenfranchisement? So we have no theatre, we have no folk art, we have no alternative but to go to the local cinema and watch a 3-hour long film. We don't have a place to make out with a girlfriend, okay? We don't have a place to hold hands with our wives because our house is full of lots of relatives. We don't really have an option except to go and watch an escapist drama because we really need to escape.
Bollywood is built on escapist fantasy, but I wanted to find out whether India's working classes have a desire for more realism in their films. So I went to the movies.
There are 13,000 cinemas in India. Every 2 months, an audience as large as the entire population of this country goes to the cinema. Bollywood directors have argued that the masses want escapist fantasy films. The CBFC say it's their job to maintain decency and morality. But what does the man on the street in Mumbai really think? The monsoons have well and truly begun, and I'm outside a cinema called Galaxy in Bandra. It is absolutely heaving full of people waiting to see the latest movie that's on show. And it's pretty much all men. There's only a couple of women I can see, and me. We're drawing quite a lot of attention. And Sunday night is cinema night in India. So I'm just asking, there's a group of young lads standing outside. I don't know, 18-year-old lads. And who's the film you've seen? Rowdy Rathore.
Rowdy
Rathore. Why? What did you hear about it? Tell me.
Achche ka action.
They've basically come to see Randy Rathore because it's got Akshay Kumar, who is a big Bollywood hero, so they've come to see his action film. Aapko kya acha lagta hai is unke movies mein? Action, nachna, gana,
items.
They love the item song. Randy Rathore mein film mein kya acha.
Love story.
Love story.
Love story. The love story. Aapko kaise lagega aaj Shah Rukh Khan negative role kare ya Salman Khan negative role kare? Aapko acha lagega? Batao kyon? So I basically asked how they would feel if their heroes, Salman Khan or Shah Rukh Khan, did negative roles. And he said, no, no, it wouldn't be good because they're actors and they're heroes, not negative role actors.
Love stories, action, heroes and heroines and item numbers. Well, Bollywood certainly has no problem making those films. And as long as they have the right name attached, the audience will flock, regardless of the story. But what sorts of films do new directors in Mumbai aspire to make? Often, it's what India is still scared to see.
Something that shakes you up into kind of breaking down the walls around you. Something that shows a side of life that you actually been wanting to ignore for a long time.
Dibakar Banerjee.
You see, the average Western audience, you have solved hot water, easy transport to office, food problems, which leaves you with a lot of free time. And in that free time, the average Western cinegoer wants to say, okay, now let us see what is wrong with the farmers of North Africa. And now let's see how this small boy in Thailand learns to become an elephant driver. Because, oh God, it brings a tear to my eyes because, you know, it's so good to see other cultures kind of trying to make themselves. So it's a sense of comfort, and it also, it's a sense of whiling away time, which essentially forms a cinephile audience. India does not have the luxury to have a sizable body of cinephile audience yet. We have too many problems of our own and we need to escape. And that will be the staple of Indian audience for a long time to come, and we shall remain in the margins, and that's the way it has to be.
In India, established Bollywood films still reign supreme. New filmmakers trying to break out of this mould and make films that are more Western in their style are accused of not appealing to real Indian audiences. The argument continues in India over who directors should be making films for. But beyond the country, there's an estimated diaspora of 25 million who live all around the world, and they love their movies.
Some of the great Indian stories should be seen by the world and not just be limited to India.
Are Western audiences ready to appreciate Indian-style film?
Hollywood is now in India, so we've got 20th Century Fox, we've got Sony from across East Asia, we've got lots of big global players. There's a huge youth demographic population there, which is, you know, bringing in talent but also money. So it's imminent. I think we're waiting for the right script or the right project to be marketed properly, and once that happens, then I think that will break down barriers.
With big Hollywood directors being influenced as much by Bollywood as Bollywood is by the West, when will we see a cross-pollination between them, a coming together of talent, skills and stories that appeal to audiences all over the world? Join me, Anita Rani, in part two of Bollywood Breaking Barriers by Sparklab Productions, next week on the BBC World Service.